This recording was made in The Booth, a ministry of Preston Hollow Presbyterian Church in Dallas, Texas. Hello, this is John Hamm. I'm accompanied by Bobby Womack, and we are both going to tell the story of the Tuesday morning men's breakfast. Bobby, why don't you start off and tell us about the history of this organization?
Well, way back in 1983, seems like yesterday, but 34 years ago, Moselle Irons, who is the wife of Jack Irons, was talking to Jerry Shetler and said, y'all need to do something about having a men's group that can either have a Bible study or whatever y'all decide you want to do. And lo and behold, it came to pass. And guess what? Moselle volunteered Jack to be one of the starters of this whole thing. And a couple of the guys that from the church that I guess you might say at the time were the pillars mm-hmm. of the men in the church was Hawkins Menifee, Fuzzy Cox, Jim Watson, Bill Clark. Oh, the list goes on and on. And believe me, my mind at my age is not where I can remember every one of them all the time. But they were the group that basically put us together.
When did you come in? Was it right then?
No, I was a late starter. I didn't get here until, I think it was 88 I got here.
Okay.
I joined the church in 85. In fact, my anniversary is coming up first of next month. And I joined the church, and Fuzzy Cox drugged me down to the men's breakfast, kicking and screaming. but once I got there, I realized this is a good place. Yeah. I'm going to have fun in here.
I think I joined in 2003, the year I retired, and I was going to just try it out, and I have been a loyal fan ever since. It's just been a great experience.
It's a strange thing, John. Guys come for the first time, and they come back.
Yeah.
But we got to get them in the door the first time.
Right.
So a lot of them are saying, well, I don't want to do this, and I don't want to do that. But once we get them there, and they see how much fun we have, they come back.
Well, one of the main things they say is, yeah, but you start at 6:45. And that is a deterrent for some. But you quickly find out there is so much more fun being in that group than there is laying in bed. And so you're right. It takes a couple of times to see how much fun we have. But
Well, what do you think is going to be like 34 years from now, John?
Well, 34 years from when it opened, as is today, we meet every Tuesday morning at 6:45, and we will run until maybe 8 a.m. And I tell speakers that if you go beyond 8, you're probably going to have half an audience. We meet every Tuesday, and this is strange for some because, well, you take off holidays or you take off, you know. We meet every Tuesday unless the Tuesday falls on Christmas or New Year's. Those are the only times we have days off. And how about weather? Have we ever been shut down for weather, Bobby?
Yeah, we had an ice storm way back when, and the guys showed up here, but believe it or not, there was no power in the church. That was the problem. The storm had been the night before, and it killed all the power in the church. So everybody says, well, hey, let's run over to Denny's. It's just right up here. They can handle it. Well, I think there was 44 of us that morning showed up at Denny's, and I don't know whether they had 44 customers all day for breakfast.
So that was a Tuesday morning Denny's breakfast.
Yes, and guess what? They couldn't accommodate us. They really had their hands full trying to take care of 44 guys.
So we meet in the old dining room, which is right next to Founders Hall, and we use the kitchen to fix the breakfasts. We have 105 active members of the breakfast group that get emails about the breakfast every week. Typically, we have a group of 30 to 40 that show up, and they're kind of rotating people. Some of those 105 have moved that are on our mailing list, and I have asked them, do you want to be off? And they said, no, we want to keep tabs on what you guys are doing.
Yeah, I've had more guys tell me that have left the church and come back for a visit or something. Geez, we sure appreciate getting that email about the men's breakfast.
It is great. Over the course of the 34 years, we have had a number of members who have died. In fact, that number is now at 78. 78 former members of the Men's Breakfast. And we honor them. We've honored them in two ways. One is a scholarship that I'll talk about later. But the other is we had a series of presentations where we went through each one of them individually and talked about them. Bobby, you were in charge of that. How did that work?
Well, I tell you, the thing that was amazing to me is how much, if I couldn't recall it, there was somebody else that could recall the stories of these people and what they'd done. And it, I've had requests to redo the program, and I plan on doing it sometime whenever you have a slot available.
Yeah. Right? And what I remember about that presentation is a lot of people remember those that have died from where they sat in the room.
Amen.
It's kind of like church. You know, you sit in your preferred pew. Well, apparently in the breakfast, and I am a rebel on that. I try to sit at every other table. But there are a lot that have their kind of their assigned seats in the breakfast.
Well, I guess I have probably the most prominent assigned seat because I'm the last one out of the kitchen.
Well, let's turn to that, Bobby. You have been in charge of the cooking of the breakfast for how long?
Well, this year at Christmas will be my 30th year of hosting or doing cooking for the ladies when they come to church. We invite the ladies mm-hmm. on that Tuesday before Christmas. But one of the things I must say first is that when we first started, we had a full staff in the kitchen down at the other end. And Eddie was one of the cooks, and he provided the breakfast then. A couple of years later, we did away with the kitchen staff because we didn't have the need for it. And consequently, the men's breakfast took over their own breakfast cooking.
We had to eat our own cooking.
And one morning, after I got here, I think it was my second year, I came early that morning and I walked into the kitchen because that's where only anybody was at. Mm-hmm. So I went in there and I looked over there and there's this nice grill sitting there. And I said, "Don't you guys use a grill?" And I looked at me and said, "We don't know how to operate it." I said, "Oh my goodness gracious, that's the easiest thing in the world." I said, "Why don't we make eggs to order?" Because what we'd been doing is scrambling 60 eggs every Tuesday morning in two skillets.
I see.
Sometimes whoever was cooking one, they would dry them out, and the other would have them runny. And so when we started doing the eggs to order, we didn't have that problem with the 60 eggs anymore. We only scrambled 30, and that solved that problem. But
it also solved another problem. Whenever you say in an organization, "We ought to do it this way," what happens, Bobby?
Well, there's a thing called rebellion. No, I've never done it that way, and I'm not going to do it that way. But I'm sorry. Right now, I'm chief cook and bottle washer.
And have been since?
Have been since 29 years ago.
Wow. Wow.
We have fried eggs in the morning, scrambled eggs, bacon, sausage. You know, occasionally we do potatoes, hash brown potatoes, pork chops every once in a while. We used to have steaks when Fuzzy was alive because mm-hmm. he owned a steak business. And he used to, every once in a while, bring in steaks, what we'd call breakfast steaks, and we'd do them. We have biscuits, toast. We've never had but a couple of times French toast because it's too difficult to do. Mm-hmm. But basically, it's a good old-fashioned breakfast that sticks to your ribs.
Well, one of the members, supposedly anonymously, every year contributes to buy Chateaubriand that we have as a meal, and that is something special.
Well, he started this a couple of years ago, and he says, "I'm going to let you get the meat, and you handle it, and I'm going to tell you, I look forward to that breakfast because it's really fun."
Yep.
And also, I've learned out one thing over the years. If somebody complains about cooking, you're working next week.
Yes. Well, I remember one time I put out the email telling about who's speaking the next week and if we're going to have anything special. And one time you sent me an email that we're having PC. And so I wrote down we're having pancakes. And out came the pork chops. And people were very disappointed or very excited. But PC did not mean the same thing to me.
Now, and also PC means privileged characters, and we do have a few of those at our breakfast.
You mentioned earlier the annual Christmas breakfast that we have for the wives. How did that start?
Well, Hawkins, the first year that I was involved in it, had suggested that we invite the wives, and we do it the closest Christmas, Tuesday to Christmas. And he says, why don't we serve Eggs Benedict? And my first comment was, you got to be kidding. We can't do that many eggs in water. You know, there's just not,
yeah.
And have it timed so that everybody gets to eat in a timely manner. I said, but I tell you one thing, we had ordered a newer grill shortly thereafter, a bigger one. And I'm able to put probably 30 eggs on the grill at one time.
Wow. And you've served up to 100?
Yes. Well, the biggest crowd we had was 115 one year.
Wow. Wow. So, but we do honor them by starting at 7:30 as opposed to 6:45. And we often will have either a speaker or we will sing Christmas carols.
Well, we always sing Christmas carols. Blair always loved doing that program for the ladies because it was fun because his lovely bride could come with him and be there and watch the crew, as we call it, and how we banter with each other. But that breakfast is very special. It's just something I look forward to doing.
Yep.
So,
structurally, we will start at 6:45. We'll have breakfast and a lot of good discussion amongst our tables. And then we'll start our business program typically around 7:10, 7:15.
Yep.
You will be the moderator for these. And so how does that typically go? What do you do?
Well, the first thing we do is that we always open with a prayer. After opening with a prayer, we find out illness, what's going on with people in their health. Birthdays is next. And one of the interesting things is sometimes we have people who have the same birthday. Yours, for example, and John Olson are the same birthday. And I remember the first time we did this, Blair was there, and I said, instead of singing happy birthday to each one of them, we're going to say happy birthday to y'all. So as we got through with it and we get close to the end, it's happy birthday to all y'all. And that is kind of stuck.
Yes, it has. So after those announcements, we then sing a hymn. Sometimes that is accompanied by a pianist.
Well, for a long time, we didn't have a pianist, and I myself do know how to read the notes in music. I just don't know what key to put it in. I always say we're going to sing in a key of garage today. But once it gets started, I usually am fortunate enough that I guess I've been around the Presbyterian Church long enough to know a lot of the hymns basically from memory. Terry Price once told me that you're very gifted. You're one of those that can hear something and do it a couple of times, and it sticks with you. I said, well, that's probably one of the rare things that sticks in my mind.
Well, that's me, except it's with food. It sticks with me, unfortunately.
Well, I'm glad it does, John. I like to see my labors, benefiting somebody.
So after the hymn, we will get on to the programs, which we're going to spend a few minutes talking about in a second. But at the conclusion of the program, we always close with the Lord's Prayer.
Yes, always.
And send the guys out.
To go out to do God's work.
That's right. Well, let's talk about the presentations that we have. Let's first talk about the pastors and the staff. They come to give presentations.
Yeah, and we try to get, if we have somebody new join the church that's in that capacity somewhere, they may not be, present all the time on the pulpit.
Right.
But they're there, and we need to know how they got there, a little bit what brought them there, the things that you really would like to know about a pastor.
And we've done that for Matthew, and we've done that for Paul. And Sarah, and most recently Margaret, who have come in, and I think they initially think they're going to do a Bible study, and Blair used to do a lot of Bible study, but in their case, what we really wanted to know was where'd they come from, what were they doing, and how'd they get here?
I have to laugh when we bring the new ministers in, so to speak, or anybody involved with that, is that you can kind of see they're a little bit nervous because really I think they've always heard the stories about the men's breakfast, and we're really a bunch of good old guys. We just like to have fun.
Yeah.
And if you can't come into our room, so to speak, and have fun, you don't need to come in there.
Well, I think the reason they're a little hesitant is not because our reputation with regard to when they come, but we have a tradition of roasting the outgoing pastors, and we have done that with Blair and Dan and Fran and Elizabeth and Russell and Nicole and Elaine and Jim Brazel. And so we have generated a reputation of being a little tough on them when they decide to go.
Yes, and this all started out with Murphy Williams. Murphy Williams was the first one who kind of retired from the church. Mm-hmm. He was part of the men's breakfast. He was always there. And we didn't really roast him in the manner that we started roasting people afterwards. We did the same thing with Walter Bennett. Hmm. In fact, we kept calling Walter Boomerang because he'd retire, then he'd come back to the church, and he'd retire, and then he'd come back to the church. And after the third time, is this the end? And he said, yes, I am not planning on coming back next time.
Well, with Blair, I remember I believe that he had wanted to retire at 65, but deferred it for a year because he was afraid of the men's breakfast roast. And when we started talking about that roast, it became a big deal. We wound up not having it on Tuesday morning. It was a church-wide thing.
Yes, I said that we were trying to find some way to raise some money for our scholarship fund. We only had one scholarship, which I know you're going to talk about a little bit later, but we only had the one. And I figured if we would serve a great meal on a Saturday, do it in our new fellowship hall, do it in there, have our caterer cater it. I mean, it was spectacular. The meal was worth everything everybody paid for it. And believe it or not, it got to the point where I was trying to see if we could raise $25,000, because that's what our scholarship comes to have one. And lo and behold, a member of the congregation came to me and he says, I tell you what, if you're able to fulfill that scholarship of $25,000, I'll match it.
And that filling meant that people there had made contributions.
Had made contributions that attended that night. Well, as it turned out, we ended up being $1,200 short.
Right.
And I made a comment to him, and he says, well, if you can get the balance of that while we're here right now, you still have a deal. I grabbed that microphone, and I says, I have a plea to make to you folks. We need $1,200 to fulfill this $25,000 scholarship, and we will get another pledge from somebody else for another $25,000. And somebody in the back stood up. I think it was
I can't remember.
Coleman.
Okay.
Lee Coleman stood up and says, here's your check. So that's how that came about.
Well, it was a great roast. I mean, it was a lot of people. And, I mean, it was...
We had 200 people.
200 people, men and women.
Yep.
And it was a fun evening. But really, the men didn't get their roast of Blair. And so we scheduled another one, only on a Tuesday morning, much closer to when he retired. And we said, it's personal.
That's right. Oh, yes. And as the expression goes, we took no prisoners. You know, how this really started, though, was with Irv Royda. Huh. He was the first one to retire that we decided we're going to record everything.
I see.
So that they could have a record of
yep.
it and everything. You know, kind of, wow, that was really neat. So Jim Watson at the time was our moderator. And he was in charge of running all the programs. But I was designated that morning to run and steer the roast. I said, okay. Well, back then, we didn't have the elaborate system that we have in our dining room now.
Yeah.
We had a lectern that had a mic on it, and it had to be plugged in. And the closest place to plug it in was on the counter where we served coffee from and the juice and everything. And it was plugged in. And Jim got up. And as he got ready to do this, as he turned to walk away, he jerked the plug out of the wall, and the first words out of his mouth, which you'd never think coming from him, was, "God damn it." I think everybody in the place busted out laughing. But we didn't realize that we were doing this on tape. So when we presented the tape to Irv for him to enjoy again in the privacy of his home with his family and everything, he puts it in and turns it on. The next day he said to me, he says, "That was a great presentation, except for the two opening remarks." So ever since then, we edit everything.
I think that's right. Well, as I say, we have gotten the reputation of being pretty tough, but they've now figured out that we're tough on the men.
Oh, yeah.
But the women, we just, they're tougher on us when we try to roast them.
Oh.
And I remember Nicole and Elaine, they gave far more than we gave.
Oh, and Fran was the first one.
Yes.
And Fran, I'm telling you, I've never seen so many guys so disarmed in my life.
That's exactly right. We are a bunch of old Southern gentlemen when it comes to that.
Amen.
We also do this with staff. And so over the years, we've had, in recent years, we've had Steve Jobman and Annette and Trey and Dee and Dawn come and talk to us about themselves. The one that has come the most is Dee. She's an honorary member of the Men's Breakfast.
Yeah, and she's just about as tough as some of the guys
that,
in there,
I think
too.
That's what qualifies her.
Yeah.
But she and a couple of others are lifelong Dallas residents. And to have her talk about what life was like in Dallas growing up, it was very interesting for those that have, this aren't from Dallas. But for those that were, they were saying, yeah, it was like that. Yeah, that's exactly right.
Well, I didn't grow up in Dallas, but I grew up in the South, so not much changes. All right?
The one roast of staff that left that I remember the best was Terry Price. And Blair was in the audience, and so the comments going back and forth were really hysterical, and that was taped as well.
Yes, and those two punsters, I thought we would never get through the program that morning between those two.
So beyond just Presbyterian staff, we have invited as outside guests a number of Presbyterian leaders and Presbyterian charities to talk about what they do and their organizations. For example, you invited Ted Wardlaw of Austin Seminary.
Yeah, I got to know Ted, I guess, right after Blair came very well, and he came, invited him the first time to our program, and he fell in love with the Men's Breakfast Group. He says, "Anytime you need me, you call me, and I'd love to come talk to you about anything."
Yeah.
He's been a very faithful presentator for us.
The same for Dick Powell, who is the most recent CEO of Mo Ranch, and he comes at any request.
Yep. Mo Ranch is to us has really taken on a true meaning for us as a church.
Yeah.
Our men's breakfast group is very active in it.
Mm-hmm.
Blair challenged me back 12 years ago to see mm-hmm. what I could do to build up more guys going to men's breakfast, from the men's breakfast going to Mo Ranch. Mm-hmm. Well, not only did I start with the men's breakfast, but I also started with everybody in the church.
I remember that very well because when I had first joined the men's breakfast, I didn't want to drive all that distance to Mo Ranch, and it was really to get you off my back that I went the first time and thoroughly enjoyed it.
Well, you're not the first one to use that same phrase, all right? And some people say, you know, you have the tenacity of a bulldog. I said, well, I don't understand no, except with my wife.
Well, another one that has come and talked to us is Godwin Dixon, who has a connection to Mo Ranch because he just recently retired from Presbyterian Communities and Services as their CEO. But he has always attended Mo Ranch and has always won the canoe race.
Yes, and I think there's a lot of people happy that he's retiring. Maybe somebody else can win the canoe race, all right?
I had invited at one point Patty McNally, who is the president of the Presbyterian School here in the building. And she told the heartwarming story of one of our very first missions in the church, this school for learning disabled kids. And, I mean, it was a great presentation.
Patty has taken over from Sheila Faniff, who right. had been head of our school for years. And she has been a pleasant surprise to us. She has volunteered to do more things than Sheila didn't have the capabilities of doing because of her back and everything.
Right.
But Patty has really, really come to fore about what needs to be done with that school. Mm-hmm. And believe me, that was the first mission of our church.
That's right. So. And the second one, and the one we're most known for, is Vickery Meadow Learning Center. And we have had Sarah, who was the head of that, come and talk to the men's breakfast.
Yep, I was one of the people that helped put that thing together. And the golf tournament that we had raised a ton of money for it way mm-hmm. back when. And we still put a lot of funds into Vickery Meadow Learning Center.
We've had over the years a representative from Presbyterian Children's Homes talk to us about their services, and most recently Sarah Newell gave a presentation to the men.
Yeah, and that's another thing that we've had some past members who were very active in the children's home.
I don't actually know how long this tape goes, but this next part it could take a long time. It is, in my opinion, the very best of the Tuesday morning men's breakfast for the presentations. This is the time where somebody will come to me in the breakfast and say, I want to sign up for 3 weeks from now on Tuesday to tell my story. And that's what they are doing. We love to tell our stories. And just about every one of the men in the breakfast has gotten up at one time or another and has started with back where my ancestors came from and back where I was born and what I did growing up. And it's amazing how many of us were paper boys, for example, and where I went to school and what I did in school and where I went to work and the jobs that I've had and how I found my way to Dallas and how I found my way to Preston Hollow. They are the most interesting stories imaginable.
After we started doing this, John, one of the things that just, I mean, every time I think about it, I just boil over, and that was Jim Watson.
Yeah.
Jim Watson was, we never learned anything about Jim Watson until we read his obituary.
Really?
Yes. Every time I see his son, Steve, I say, you know, I realize I took over from your dad as moderator of this in 2002. But I'm going to tell you one thing. I will never forgive your father for not telling his story.
Yeah.
He was involved with J. Paul Getty. He was all over Europe. He was played an instrument. He played in the band. He sang in the choir. Had the best bass voice of anybody in the choir back then. But it was never about me.
Yep.
It was all about everybody else but himself.
Yeah.
But that was one of the unfortunate things that we never got a chance to learn anything about.
Yeah. And I think that's the exception, because just about everybody has gotten up to talk about themselves. And I'm thinking of Z. Z has one of the most amazing stories of his ancestry and starting out in Budapest, and his family was able to survive the Nazis. But when the communists took over, they went and fled. And they wound up in a refugee camp, and before long, or actually quite a bit later, they were able to get sponsored to come to the United States. It is an incredible story.
That's the type of things that you don't realize about people. You never know the story behind someone. It's just one of those things that has to be drug out.
Yep.
You know, and once somebody gets up and does it, the next person said, well, I can do that.
Yeah, right.
And there's some people that, believe it or not, to get them to get up and talk in front of somebody, you almost have to prod them, stand them up there, yep. and hold them to do something. But once they start, it's amazing.
Well, as program director, I've had a lot of people say, listen, I'm not good in front of an audience. I said, but just talk about yourself. Tell us about your background. You don't need any prep for that or audio visual.
Yeah.
And they pretty much all do.
Right. Bill Dix came to us. He's a a trader was a trader in the stock market.
And that's right.
He had lived in Dallas. He had moved to New York. And all of a sudden, he'd had enough. He comes back to Dallas, and he comes to PHPC. What a wonderful find for us. He has been so active. He's worked with you on the scholarship thing with Ralph.
Yeah.
And he's just, he always volunteers. And that's what every church needs, is a good, strong volunteer.
He has told his story several times in several different occasions, all dealing with athletics.
And yes.
He talked about his football scholarship to Dartmouth.
Yep.
And got injured. And then after graduating, he joined a rugby club. Now, rugby is a lot harder than football, but he talked about how it was to be on a rugby team, club team, and the camaraderie there. And he then came back more recently to talk about golf. I guess he has evolved physically to where golf is a more appropriate thing than rugby and football. But, I mean, they're just fascinating stories that he has told.
Anybody who played rugby, I have an awful lot of empathy for.
Yeah.
So,
well, I also remember Bill Bond, who talked about his story. And I don't even think you have to say Duke. You just say Duke, and he'll finish the sentence. And he has had a very interesting experience going to Duke and basically having to withdraw for a while because of dyslexia. And he got treatment and went back. And, I mean, it's again, a heartwarming story that you'd never know if you just met him.
He tells us he's cured. Nah. I don't think so.
Just this past week, we had Bill Johnson come in and dress as George Washington and read from Washington's Journal of Surveys.
Man, you just never know who's going to show up at our men's breakfast.
Bobby, you have had a couple of personal experiences that you've shared with us in growing up in Alabama and Michigan, and again, incredibly interesting.
One of the things that really shocked, and this is right after I had joined a men's group, is that someone said, we're going to go over to Grapevine, and we're going to take the tarantula train to Fort Worth.
Huh.
And, of course, that's a steam engine. So that morning, I think there were five carloads went over there.
Huh.
I think it was about 20 of us. And everybody was standing around and waiting to board the train and everything. So I was over asking the engineer some questions about the engine, you know, the steam engine. And he says, how do you seem to know so much about a steam engine? I said, well, I don't know whether I was fortunate or unfortunate, but when I was going to college, I had gotten a job with the Pennsylvania Railroad. And I fired a steam engine during the summer months when I went to college. So the guy says, well, come on up here. So I climbed up, and he said, sit down in the engineer seat. He said, you know what this was for? I said, yeah, that's the lever that you set the air up for the cars. Mm-hmm. What's that one? I said, that's for the engine. He said, do you know what it is for when you're ready to go, the train's ready to leave? I said, yeah, it's two shorts. He said, well, there's a whistle, pull the cord. So I pulled it, gave two shorts, and he says, did you get a signal from the conductor? He says, yeah, he gave me a highball. He says, well, why don't you grab a handful of throttle and let's take this train to Fort Worth? And here I am dressed up with a nice, clean, light pair of pants and a light shirt on. And trust me, you cannot do anything around a steam engine that you don't get dirty. I didn't have any gloves or nothing, but we took the train to Fort Worth, and he says, how would you like a job after we got over there? And I said, no, I think that segment of my life has passed.
Well, there have been a lot of stories, and we really don't have time to talk about them, but I'd like to mention them anyway. Mark Chandler told a fascinating story of his career in Oklahoma as an Indian judge.
Yes.
Fascinating. We had Lee Coleman and John Purcell. And John Olson had talked about his time. Jack Irons, oh, my goodness. I mean, he talked about West Texas and growing up there, and everything seems to run through Spring, Texas.
Yes, it does. And if you've ever been to Spring, Texas, I always told Jack, I don't know what's there.
I told my story, and one of the interesting parts of that was when, and sort of figuratively, my dad kicked me out of the house after my junior year in college because I had no ambition to do anything besides party. And we worked a deal that I would not come home after finishing junior year in college, and I would work my way around the country with no money. And so I had to pick up jobs all over the country, going from east to west, to California, to Mexico, to Canada, and then on back in time to enroll my senior year in college. And it changed my life. I mean, it was a fascinating story.
Well, it has made every one of us appreciate the things that each one of us do.
That's right. That sharing of our own story. But that isn't the only presentations we have from the men. We are an incredible traveling group, and we have had any number of people make presentations about where they have gone, far and wide.
Like where?
Like West Texas.
That's a foreign country.
Grand Canyon, China, Rio de Janeiro, England, Scotland and Wales, Ireland, Western Europe and Normandy, Italy, Australia, Lake Tahoe, Romania, West Texas. Did I say that before?
Yes,
West
you
Texas.
Did. Yeah.
Turkey, Budapest, London, Spain, Portugal, and another foreign country, New Jersey. They have been fascinating presentations with pictures and videos, and any number of us have decided to go on a place, on a trip, solely because of the presentations.
I tell you what, those stories are put together so well. It's an entertaining morning like you can't believe. And I've said it once, I'll say it again. You never know what you're going to learn at the Tuesday morning's men's breakfast.
Which brings us to education. Besides just travel, we will have members of the church and of the men's breakfast get up and talk about specific topics that are very interesting. For example, Steve Watson is a big fan of history, and specifically Civil War history, and he gave a fascinating presentation about the generals that fought on both sides in the Civil War that were classmates at West Point before the war and remained friends. I mean, it was a fascinating story that he told.
You never know these things unless somebody knows about it or studied it or it happens to be their passion. Linus Wright, even though he's not the superintendent of the Dallas schools, he is so knowledgeable about what's going on in education and what we really need to do as a country to better ourselves. And I think he's still serving on a committee. I know he was with the past president. I don't know whether he's going to be with the new one, but I hope that he does continue in some way because he has something to contribute.
Golf, that comes up quite a bit at the men's breakfast. And you've been kind of part of that. I think it's fair to say, and in fact, I read this recently, that the bucket list of elderly men have the number one sporting event they want to go to is the Masters.
Yes, sir. I have had the pleasure of, I guess over the years, I have been involved in golf through working with course construction and golf cars and things of that nature that I have been 13 times.
Wow.
Most recently, 2 years ago. I have been on the list to get season tickets since 1978.
Wow.
And guess what? I have never got a season pass to this day.
Well, the other things that we've learned about are private jet travel when Mike Wright came in and talked about it. We have an annual book review by Jeff Goodell. And he always does this on his birthday, or the Tuesday nearest his birthday, and he will give us the benefit of all of his reading throughout the year and what he liked, but most importantly, what he didn't like, so we don't have to waste our time reading those books.
It's nice to have someone that's an editor for you.
We also have a famous alumni that comes in periodically who is a golfer.
Yeah, David Frost. I'm kind of like years ago, I met David by my son was caddying for his wife's boss in Miami at the Doral. Huh. And David Frost and his group came up, and we came up right behind him. I was just a spectator like everybody else was. And David was standing there, and I said, David, you and I know each other. He says, how's that? I said, well, you go to Preston Hollow Presbyterian Church. He says, you're right. What are you doing in Miami? I said, well, this is my son, and I introduced my son to him. He's caddying for this fellow right here. And David said, well, it's certainly nice meeting you. I hope we get to talk to each other again. Well, I was very fortunate to attend both of his kids' baptismals here at the church.
Uh-huh.
David and I became friends. One time his father was in town from South Africa, and he called me and he says, Bobby, would you do me a favor? Would you go play golf with my dad? I don't have the time. I said, sure, where at? And he says, over at Prestonwood Country Club. I said, okay. So I went over that morning and played with his dad. We had a great time, had lunch afterwards. He said, Bobby, could you play golf with me tomorrow? That's my last day in town. I'd like to play one more time before I leave. And I said, well, let me check my schedule, and I'll call you back. And he says, okay. So I called him back and said, yes, I'll meet you the next morning. So we played golf again. We're having lunch. He said, I'd like to ask you to do me a favor. I said, well, maybe. What you need? He said, when David's here, would you keep an eye on him? And I kind of sat back in my chair, and I says, what did I do to deserve that? So basically, David is kind of like an adopted son for me.
And he comes to our breakfast periodically.
Yes, he does. The last time he was here, he had already had two divorces, and he informed me that he was going to get married again. And I looked him square in the eye, and I said, why? He didn't speak to me for a year.
We've had programs on music appreciation. Bruce Patti has come in and talked about his work at the symphony on the violin and has played for us.
Oh, well, what a talent. We're so blessed to have some of the people in our choir that are really talented, you know. We had another person that was very active in our church in politics. And the one thing we do not discuss at the men's breakfast is politics.
We could.
We could, but I don't allow it. I don't want any fights to break out. But Fred Meyer was head of the Republican Party.
Uh-huh.
And Fred had come and talked to us a couple of times about the state of the church, you know, and where we were and what was going on, especially when we were making the new addition to the church. He came to the men's breakfast and told us just exactly what we were trying to do. And to have someone with that capacity that is not only involved in politics, but he's involved in church, and he knows what he's doing, and it was so interesting. When he died, myself and Bill Johnson, we had to get security clearance to work the funeral.
Wow.
And that was primarily because President Bush was coming to the funeral.
Uh-huh.
And I looked at Bill, and I said, my God, I haven't had to have security clearance since I was in the service. He said, neither have I. So.
Well, the that the politics is an issue that we have very strong views within the men's breakfast, as we do in the church.
Oh, yeah.
And we just basically have a no partisanship type rule, and it gets broken periodically.
Yeah, once in a while, somebody.
We try to moderate that. One of the presentations I did this past year was in three parts that I had the luck, really, to attend a musical in New York by the name of Hamilton when it had just opened, and it became, of course, a big hit. And so I did a three-part presentation on Alexander Hamilton, the man, the book, and the musical. And boy, did I have fun doing that.
Oh, and I'm going to tell you, I never thought I'd see guys get so involved and so interested in something like that.
Yeah.
You did an outstanding job, John. Thank you.
All right, is there anything I can thank you for? No. Let's talk about outside speakers. We've had everything we've talked about for the most part so far has been inside speakers, but sometimes we go out and find speakers that talk about various things. And recently we had Fred Hoster, who was very instrumental in the construction of the Meyerson Symphony Hall. And he did a wonderful presentation on what it took to do that and how it was constructed.
Well, not only that, but how they raised the money for it.
Right, right.
That was even more spectacular.
Yep.
How about Doug Fox, from South Fork?
He was grew up in on the ranch that was the original ranch for the movie or the TV show Dallas.
Right.
And he was raised on it.
Yeah, and I never knew it, but it was in Frisco.
Yeah.
And it's still there.
Well, it's still there, but what happened is his father, who was the model for J.R. Ewing, after a year of having all these actors and crew on his land, said, get out of here.
Yeah.
And so they basically had to move the set to another South Fork ranch farther east, I believe it was.
Yes. And have you ever been to there, John?
I have not, no.
You need to go. It's unbelievable how small that house is, but how big it was on TV.
Yep. We had somebody come in that was involved in the new express lanes on LBJ. And I got a kick out of having the word express and LBJ in the same sentence. It doesn't make any sense to me.
Definitely an oxymoron.
We also had somebody that talked about the construction of the High Five.
Yeah. That's how we got involved with what's going on with the Express 635.
That's right.
Yep. Yeah.
Yep. We had somebody come in that was one of the original employees at Tesla Motors and talk about the electric car and how that works. At any rate, we've had lots of outside speakers, but there was about 7 years ago, the late Ralph Coplin, who was a very important member of the Men's Breakfast, said, you know, we have a lot of fun, we have a lot of food and fellowship, but we don't have any ministry that goes beyond our group. We ought to do something outside. And he came up with the idea of putting together a memorial fund, a memorial scholarship fund, and it would honor the over 70 former members of the Breakfast. And it would be in favor of the next generation going to college. We would give scholarships to church members that were going off to college. And so it was a generation thing, honoring those that have gone before us and honoring those that will come in fit. As Bobby mentioned, it takes a lot of money to put together a scholarship fund. And he talked about how we currently have a balance of over $80,000 and award 3 scholarships a year.
And, you know, the one thing that I was not involved with was that. And my comment was, at the time, I remember talking to you and to Bill Dix, and mm-hmm. I forgot who the other party was. Was it Jose Stewart?
Yes, it was. It was Jose.
And I said, hey, I don't need anything else on my plate. I myself have been blessed, or whatever you want to call it, to serve on the property committee now for over 25 years. And I'm currently chair of the property committee. Someone once told me that was a member long before I got there said, you ought to be chair of this a long time ago because your meetings don't last more than an hour.
That was your key attribute.
Yeah, I guess that's why they got me now. So,
well, at any rate, that scholarship thing was the mover of that was Ralph. He was the one that had the idea. He generated the interest. And Jose and I, myself and Bill, we participated in it. But he was the true, and it's now an institution.
Nobody can give you enough accolades for what y'all did, John. Yeah. I know that the people that receive these scholarships are very grateful. Most of them come and talk to the Men's Breakfast about what they're planning on doing with their careers and mm-hmm. what they're studying and everything. And that kind of makes us feel good that when we contribute something like that, that it's benefiting the kids.
Yep. I think the other thing we actually have already talked about that is our ministry outside of Tuesday morning is your efforts on Mo Ranch. And we've already talked about that, but I think that is a ministry, if you will, that started with the Men's Breakfast.
Well, speaking for myself, it's a labor of love. If I didn't enjoy doing it, I've learned I don't do something I don't enjoy doing.
Mm-hmm.
Like I've been 30 years cooking breakfast. Everything I've done with my life except the job has been the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I guess I'm a creature of habit. And I accepted Blair's challenge is that I wanted to see what we could do.
Yep.
And this year, at the rate it's going, looks like we're going to have 90 plus.
Wow.
going to men's conference at Moran.
Well, I think this tape is about to run out. So, Bobby, why don't you sum up?
Well, let's put it this way. The Tuesday morning men's breakfast, we offer food, fellowship, sharing of our own story.
This recording was made in The Booth, a ministry of Preston Hollow Presbyterian Church in Dallas, Texas. For more information about The Booth, visit www.phpc.org.